Well, have you ever been stuck in a job and you're looking at going out on your own? Well, my next guest did exactly that and has had huge success. Stick around. Welcome to the District 32 Business Insider Show. I'm your host, Michael Worthington. And yes, my very, very special guest this week is Mr. Andrew Ford from Ford & Doonan. How are you, Andrew?
Very well, Michael. Thanks for the invite to talk today.
Oh, excellent. I love actually chatting to someone who actually had the courage to go, you know what, I don't think I want to work for somebody else. I think I'll go work for myself. I think there's a lot of listeners going, me too, but how'd you do it? And how'd you get the courage to do it? I guess that's the first question I want to ask you. And then I'll do a snapshot of Ford & Doonan, but you're pretty well known. But I think that is something that goes, how did you take that first step?
I guess, well, we're very young. I was only 19 years old, just finished my apprenticeship in refrigeration and air conditioning, and my business partner, Kyle Doonan, was my new tradesman, and he was only 20 years old, and we decided, well, we don't like being told what to do, and let's just do this ourselves. So I think it was very much ignorance was bliss, and we just didn't really know what we were getting into. Of course, we knew nothing at 19, but learnt very quickly.
It's a really interesting comment you make. Do you think as we get older, we get more cautious, and that is just a false premise? It actually stops us doing that. Really, we could do it?
Definitely. And that's one of the big things that sort of got us through, especially being a seasonal business like we are, where obviously we're busy in summer and winter, quite the opposite. In those early days, that first winter came around and the business couldn't support two of us. So Kyle left the business and went and got a wages job, and I sort of battled it out through winter, and then Kyle returned for the summer, and then the business could support us both. But that was both, my age was both a benefit and a hindrance, because whilst our knowledge was very limited, we didn't have any expenses, we didn't have a mortgage, we didn't have a family, kids, wife, all that sort of thing that obviously plays a bearing on one's mind when they're contemplating starting a business. Is I've got to make X amount of dollars just to, you know, pay the family's bills each month, week. I didn't have that pressure. So that was one of the good things about starting so young, Michael.
And I'm just listening to that. I'm just wondering, if you were starting and you do have those type of pressures, and I've heard you speak, and I'm very keen on this, is this where people really need to get themselves a good solid buffer zone if they're going to take you? Because I know you will take risks, but yours are very, very calculated. You're very smart in how you do this.
Yeah, definitely. Look, you can build up that buffer, because business, as we know, isn't always as good as what the business plan says and the financials projections. So I think you definitely need that breathing space. Will take a lot of the pressure off you, maybe overcome that fear of failure that stops so many other business people getting into business.
I noticed one. I just want to backtrack, because I think this would be an interesting point. So you're in a business, you've got Kyle. Kyle goes off and gets a job because obviously the business won't support too. Someone's going to say to you, but Andrew, you were running this business. What was your attitude for Kyle coming back? Did you ever feel like, oh, I can do this by myself? You know, and I think that some people think that way, but you didn't. What was it in there that going, guys, we're together, I don't care if you leave, come back, leave, come back? You didn't seem to have that as a barrier for your partnership.
No, it's a good point. I suppose I did bear some resentment at points through that first winter when I was earning virtually nothing, enough just to put fuel in the car and buy a beer at the end of the week, where he was back earning a decent salary again. But I said some areas of resentment there, but not really. I think because Kyle was always a better technically at the trade than what I was. So I knew I needed someone with a bit more skills in that area. And like any partnership, we each have our strengths and weaknesses. And that's one reason why we lasted 40 years, but I'm sure we'll get to that. So I knew I needed that more technical ability that Kyle brought to the table.
It's really interesting, because I think a lot of people, they let their egos get in the way and think they can just do everything. And I've listened to you in many, many talks, and that you're a very, very competitive person. Let's not get this wrong, but you don't let your ego get in the way of decision making and business decision making.
I try not to, as you said, it's hard, isn't it? We've all got an ego, and it just depends how much you need to stoke it. But I've always tried to be rational and humble in that regard, and not let my ego get out of hand. But we all go through little parts of our lives when we look back that you think, yeah, I probably could have pulled my head in a little bit then.
I'm holding my hand up. But I suppose there's what is that magic form? I mean, Ford and Doonan, 40 years. What do you got? 11 franchises. You're just going. We're based in Perth, West Australia. You're now expanding into the eastern states after 40 years. And some people are going, really? Why? But just before I touch on that, what's this magic formula? Because we see so many partnerships fall apart in business. What is it? What have you got?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I get asked that a lot, obviously, and it is very unique. And I've said it many times, it's like a marriage in more ways than one might first imagine. Is that it's that respect, I think. And when we ever had a typical decision where one person sort of really wanted something and the other person didn't necessarily agree, we always had the ability, if the other was that passionate about it, I can normally talk the other one in to say yes to it. As opposed to just digging their heels in and on principle going, no, I've said no, that's it, you know, and that started the friction. So I think that's a being able to let go of some things and give and take, and also the ability just to communicate when we are pissed off of each other, which it happens.
Yeah.
We just sit down and just thrash it out. So say, look, what you said yesterday really annoyed me, or whatever the case may have been.
Mm.
And again, just, you know, shake hands and move on the next day.
Yeah, do you think your sporting background, I know you're a really keen squash player, do you think that has helped you? I mean, I see these sporting people seem to be able to just do that. The battlefield's tough, game's over, let's shake hands, and there's no resentment. Do you think that sporting background's helped you?
It may have done, Michael. It's a good question and a good point. I haven't really actually thought of it in that context, but I'm sure it had a bearing on it, yeah. But I think underlying another thing that's critical in any business partnership is trust, obviously, because you don't want to have to be checking up on the person every other day with financial aspects specifically I'm referring. And we had that ultimate trust where we never had to check up on each other. And to this day, I've never thought he's done the wrong thing by me financially. I'm sure Kyle would say the same about me. So that's trust is a major one with it as well.
And I suppose trust really does come into it because now you're talking about you've got a very, very substantial business. But I think even in the early days, I mean, you were very young. So I suppose substantial back then at a whole different benchmark, you know, to what it is now. But as that substantial bit comes in, even in those early days, there has to be. How did you guys, as young guys, actually learn the accounting side, though? I mean, it's okay for you to say, well, I've got the sales skills, you've got the mechanical skills, we can work this thing. But all of a sudden, you've got significant income coming in, and I don't know about you, I don't think you ever went through trade school and someone said, hey, guys, this is how you become a business manager.
No, exactly. You just learn on the job, don't you? And as I always say, you learn pretty quickly when you're burning your own money. So we're fortunate in one way that my mum was an accountant, my mother was an accountant, so she was our initial bookkeeper for the first few years. And she, being old school, was very focused on our money and collecting our debts and that sort of thing. So that was a big benefit, and she taught us a lot. And also another big tip I'd say for people in business, especially in the early days in starting, is don't take all the money off the table. Leave money in the business because without the money in the business capitalizing it, you just haven't got that ability to grow as much or take a few risks without that buffer zone, almost what we mentioned earlier in the conversation. So I think I definitely learned on the job. I didn't really do any formal training, but numbers were a forte of mine and maths and that sort of thing at school. So I picked all that up pretty quickly, and mum helped us a lot until I had to terminate her because she was getting too old. But that's a whole other story.
Mum's listening going, oh,
no, she's no longer listening, but no. I paid the price for a good 5 years in the family dynamics, I can assure you of that.
And that is another point, isn't it? Family dynamics. And you guys are, well, you are a family business. I mean, when you look at the nut, all right, it's two different families coming together, you know, Carl's and yours. But you now have not only the complexity of, you know, like a corporation that is held by lots and lots of shareholders. You had your two guys, two families. You've never got one family problem. You've now got two family problems. How did you set any rules around family?
We did. We very straight away we said, well, look, we're already in a partnership. We cannot bring our spouses into the business because that would just change the dynamic even further and complicate it, that I couldn't see any good coming out of that. That I'd then, for example, been torn between what my wife was saying, we should do this, you should do that. Then I've got my business partner, Kyle, saying, you should do this, we should do that. And it's a no-win situation. I could see that just spiraling out of control. So we both agreed very early that our spouses would never be involved with the business. And to this day, they never were and never will be.
But you have started to, and this is obviously part of the family business dynamics, is succession planning and handing over. And I believe both of you now have got children. Actually, your son's involved in Ford and Doonan now. Has that brought pressure? Has that changed dynamics? And how did you guys talk that through to get not just a stranger now, but actually someone with a real personal relationship?
Yeah, it's probably even more interesting. My son's quite easygoing personality like myself, which again makes things a lot easier when you don't dig your heels in at every turn.
Yeah, Christian's a nice guy. He's so easygoing. Yeah,
he's a very gentle sort of natured man.
Yeah.
We for example, if we're talking about reviews of Christian, pay reviews or performance reviews, obviously I'm not the best one to do it because I'm so biased. So we make sure that we always distance out, let one of the other directors do that. And even today, we sort of get drawn between defending him in cases that I think, would I be defending if it was another person? I'd like to think I would. But so far, so good, Michael. And everyone sort of respects Christian. I think his personality makes a big difference in the ease of bringing him into the organisation.
Well, I've had the advantage of meeting him, so I kind of know how easy it would for him just to move in. I think one of the things that a lot of people, when they go into business, and I always say to them, you know, what's your end goal? What do you want to do? And if it is succession planning, and obviously Ford and Doonan is a substantial business to do this, what were the conversations prior to getting someone like Christian in that area? Had you been talking about this for a long time? Is it something that came up recently? How did you morph this into, okay, it's ready now for the next generation?
Yeah, great question again. Well, he's been with us 5 years now, so he did a marketing degree, and from day one, he sort of indicated he's interested in joining the business. And I said, well, look, if you're going to do that, I don't want to parachute you in as the boss's son. I don't think that's going to build any loyalty from the other staff or anything like that. I said, so go and do your degree, go and get a job, go and learn some more skills outside of our business. And then if you still desire that and the situation warrants it, let's bring you in at that point. But then we had our marketing manager leave us, and Christian had just started his own digital agency just with himself and a business partner. And we had our marketing manager resign, as I said. So I went to Christian. I said, look, I don't think you're ready, but I feel I owe it to you to at least offer you the position. I understand you've got your own business now, and if you decline, that's fine. But he said, no, I want to do it. It's a bit earlier, but let's do it. So it didn't go exactly the plan. He was only working a couple of years after his degree outside of the family business, and then he joined us. So he did bring some new skill sets in. But yeah, I was very conscious of not, you know, said, parachuting him in and treating him any different to anyone else. But it's also very hard, isn't it, when it's your son?
Yeah, and I think the challenges actually go on to your other managers you've got there as well. What amazes me, and I've had the privilege of actually coming down and meeting people at Ford and Doonan, and it's like it's their family. And that was the first thing that struck me, was this is a family business, but the people in it, even though they're not personally related, still feel themselves as family. How have you managed to achieve that? That is a very difficult thing to accomplish among so many different personalities.
Yeah, it is. It's a challenge day to day sometimes too, Michael. I think the longevity of our key managers, like two of our key sort of deputies, I suppose, have been in the business 20 plus years now. So they're very much part of the family, for the want of a word, as you rightly describe them. And that culture, it's all about culture, isn't it, the business has. You know, their integrity, the way we make decisions and the ethics we practice. So that once that gets fundamentally, and the people either like what you stand for and they tend to stay, and if it's not what suits their personality or their own ethics or whatever, they tend to drift away sooner than later. So the ones left behind are very much all on the same page, let's call it.
It is a really interesting dynamic. And I suppose, you know, we have a lot of business people out there. And I think I always say, you know, there's two things that will stop you from growing your business. One is you're not automating stuff. And the two is you're not delegating stuff. And you can't delegate if you don't have staff. But you've got two people who are very, very close, yourself and Kyle, really know each other well, work really, and now you've got to employ your first person. Can you remember what that was like and what discussions and was your selection good?
Yeah, it was good, actually. It was very fortuitous. We knew we needed somebody because we just couldn't get a – we would say and have to turn away work. So obviously that's the best indicator of we need somebody else. And we actually had hired out a mature age apprentice who was halfway through his apprenticeship. And I'd met him playing squash, actually.
Ah.
And his name was Peter Nielsen. And Peter was a couple of years older than us and been in the industry and other parts of the industry before actually going back and doing an apprenticeship. He was doing commercial estimating and was very well experienced in that. So when Peter joined us, he was a very intelligent guy too. He brought us so many new systems, what you mentioned earlier, and procedures.
Yeah.
And just spreadsheets on doing things and creating. He's created a spreadsheet to this day, nearly like 37 years later. We're still fundamentally using that same spreadsheet for a lot of our costings.
Wow. Wow, that's so incredible.
It is. So we were very lucky at the time when we hired him. We didn't know the extent of his skill set. But that really helped us a lot because he also got us into where we started doing sales and design and installation and sales, where we started originally just as purely service only.
Yeah.
He had worked in this space before and brought that level of professionalism that we had no idea because we'd never worked in that space.
Yeah. It's interesting there you said he was a couple of years older than you.
Yeah, only about 3 or 4 from memory, yeah.
But you were quite young and now you're employing someone who's older. And someone that you may have looked at and goes, oh my goodness, look at his skill sets. We don't know any of this stuff, and he does. Was there hesitation? Was it like, oh my goodness, he's a bit out. Like, what was it like emotionally, or was it just for you being as you are, going, nah, I know him, it'll be great?
I think it's just the way I am. It's like I can see the big benefit here for the business and myself personally. And let's harness this and use best we can. And he finished up working with us after he finished his time. He stayed with us and he left and came back again, left, came back again. So, and that's what we've also found over the years with staff. You know, the good ones, I always say the good ones always come back. And so much when we look back in our history, staff have left to go pursue whatever.
Yep.
And then the good ones often come back and do another tenure with us. So that's just also reassuring that they really do enjoy working with us.
And it's one thing, you don't close the door. I do like that. You do allow people to go, look, I just need some, I need to go do this. And you go, yeah, off you go. And they come back and you go, yeah, that's great. You don't close the door on people.
No, and I think I learned that pretty quickly too, is that, yeah, Perth especially is a very small place. And every industry in Perth is even smaller again in reputation personally and business-wise. The business itself is critical. So I knew not to ever burn bridges because you never know when that's going to come around and either bite you in the ass or you just wish you hadn't done that because you need them again.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I will say, I mean, you're quite a sophisticated business and you have everything. You've got so many people in so many different positions. And I've met some of your franchisees that are running their positions. One thing strikes me is your leadership style, but it seems to be reflected throughout the company. Everyone seems to have this almost self-management, self-leadership and encouragement. What is that? What did you develop there?
Yeah, it's hard to articulate it or specifically quote it, I suppose, but we're so lucky with the franchise system. One of the big benefits and one of the reasons why it's succeeded for us is that over 2/3 of the franchisees worked for us prior to going out on their own in either as a PAYE relationship or even a subcontractor relationship. So that means that both they vetted us and to make sure they are a fit, and we vetted them to make sure they're going to be a fit with our culture. So that eliminated a lot of the potential risks of bringing on franchisees when you don't know them. Are they going to be rogue? Are they going to be difficult to deal with? And as we know, one bad apple can spoil a whole basket. So we've been very fortunate like that. And that was actually the impetus for us starting the franchise system, Michael, is that we'd lost one or two salespeople who went out and started their own business. And we thought, and we heard mutterings of other people talking about the same thing. And we thought, we're going to lose all our best people. And we've trained them to be competitors. And they're going to be pretty good competitors if we train them. How are we going to arrest this? And that was really the impetus to get the franchise system started. We realized we can get what we want, have them on our team. They can get what they want by working for themselves and have that autonomy. and it's a win-win situation. And we've been franchising for over 22 years or something now. So,
wow. That's a huge success just in that, and I think just what you're saying there gives people some really insightful clues into that. Now you've got a franchise, you're the franchisor and they're the franchisee. Has there been challenges where you go, oh, I might have done that a little bit differently, or has it just been quite organic and gone smoothly for you?
Overall, it's gone pretty smoothly. Again, it's just down to the people, like everything in this world, isn't it? Mm. If you get the people who are willing to be reasonable and negotiate, not necessarily get exactly what they want. So we've had a pretty good run overall, but it hasn't been trouble-free. Probably the most problematic situation we had was a few years back when we created another territory in between two existing territories of the franchisees. And that caused a little bit of pressure, let's say.
Yep.
And that spilled over into that people weren't coming to the franchise meetings if he's coming. This sort of behavior started to creep in, which was really negative and started to divide the group. So we brought in an external franchising consultant, Steve Hansen, who you may know of. Mm. And he came in and sort of facilitated, I guess, a whole group discussion with the whole group and just gave them some facts about how it all should work. And that forced us to create this ethics and rule book and a tribunal sort of system like a football. So if someone's got a grievance, instead of them just coming to us and us having to be the arbitrator, we create a little committee. But fortunately, we've never had to actually use it, but it now exists should there be a situation that's starting to escalate where we get one of the franchisor people on this little committee, some other franchisees who aren't directly involved,
yep.
And we make decisions quite like a judge, I suppose, or a high court.
It's very interesting what you do. The other thing I think is interesting from your own perspective on franchising, and obviously I mean inside knowledge here, that if I was a corporate and I'm doing franchising, I've got, well, it's basically War and Peace manual, you know, and here I'll flick to page 379 and there's the rule. And you guys are going, yeah, well, we kind of got a manual, but, you know, we're family, so we'll do it our way.
Exactly. And that's one of the best things I can say is I can't recall one time in those 22 odd years that a franchisee's opened the franchise agreement, referenced a clause and sort of tried to use that against us or to win a point. Mm. We've just never had that. We haven't, vice versa, we've never pulled that rule book out and said, you're not doing this because of that. So whilst, as you said, it sits here in the background as the sort of Bible, but we've never had to exercise it by just having reasonable people to deal with.
Yeah, it is. I mention it because I think so many times people read books and they go, oh, I have to do it this way. And the Ford and Dooning goes, no, you don't. We'll do it our way.
Exactly. And that's really been the culture or the mindset, especially of myself, is that if everyone's going direction A, we'll go direction B. Just to be different. And I remember Barry Urquhart, I'm sure you've met yourself many times. He says, better to be different than it is to be better. And that quote sat with me. That was many, many years ago.
Mm.
And that always rung true. Of course, it's not always true, but we've always sort of thought, okay, what's everyone else doing? We don't want to do what they're doing. We're going to do our own, play our own game. And it certainly turned out pretty well that we did that.
Yeah. From a customer's perspective, so we are getting pretty close to the end of our interview, but from a customer's perspective, what's the difference Ford and Doonan makes for its customers? Why should people choose Ford and Doonan over somebody else? Because you're pretty clear.
Yeah, I think it's definitely that we never walk away from a problem. Like our industry is quite complicated. You can imagine it's doing ducted air conditioning in people's houses, cutting their ceilings. Things go wrong. Tradesmen have bad days, put their foot through the ceiling, whatever when those things happen, which we, of course, hate. And they don't happen too often and we wouldn't be here. But no. They do happen. Yeah. So it's the way you deal with that. And, yeah, it's just the people, if they buy from us, no matter what happens, we'll stand by our products, answer your question. If we've done something wrong, we'll admit it, we'll fix it, and we'll make it right. And customers never can walk away saying, they left me high and dry, because we'll always stand by it.
Well, you do. And look, and full disclosure, because I've used Ford and Dooning, you put the air conditioner in my house. And I can say when the tradesman came, what I was really impressed with, he walked into one of my rooms, and you've got really clever designers, they do great jobs. And he walked in and went, I don't think I want to put the vent there. And he just looked at the room and said, based on this, can I move it to here? And we went, yeah, of course, you kind of know what you're. And what got me was the autonomy that the tradesman was in a rush. You never rushed him. He didn't have, yeah. You just do it later. And he had this autonomy to go, you know what? I can make my own decision here. And he was dead right. It works perfectly. He actually did the right thing.
That's good. Good news. Yeah, you're right. I think you've got to give staff and subcontractors, for that matter, that autonomy, because that they're the ones on the ground. What looks good on paper when we design an air conditioning system off someone's plan, it all looks great. But, you know, in the reality of the situation is, and they can often pick up things that we couldn't pick up from the drawing. So to allow them that autonomy and not be too prescriptive, I think, is a key to business success in many ways.
Yeah, it impressed me. You know, I've seen a lot of I'm from a trade background myself, and that really did impress me. What I'd like to know is that Ford and Doonan, someone coming to Andrew Ford now, or even Kyle for that matter, and say, look, I'm thinking of setting up a business in XYZ, not necessarily air conditioning. Can you give me three things I should do if I'm going to be successful?
Yes, okay. Let me see about that one. From the
first one Don't I've you done, love my is, interviews, Andrew? People know they're live. They're not scripted.
No, exactly right. Not scripted at all. Probably the first thing I would don't start business thinking the way you're going to get market share is by being the cheapest in the market. I think that's a recipe for disaster. You cannot grow a business. You cannot maintain a business if there's no money in the bank. So you've got to charge a fair price, obviously, and be competitive. Yep. But don't try to be the cheapest, try to be the best.
Yep.
That will make sure you've got the money in the bank to grow and survive.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is keep the money in the business. Like I said, mentioned earlier in our interviews, that don't, when you've started making some money, don't rip it all out of the business, go and buy a jet ski, a new house, bigger mortgage. Everything's great because you don't know what's around the corner and you may not be able to maintain that level of income.
Yeah.
So definitely squirrel it away. Be really frugal in your first couple of years on what you draw out personally. And the rewards will come in due course.
Yep.
And third thing, always do the right thing. Value your reputation above everything else.
I couldn't agree with you more. I want to ask you one last question because we are coming to the end. What do you believe has made Andrew Ford successful?
My work rate, that I'm very of a hard worker. I won't necessarily work 12 or 16 hours a day. I certainly don't these days, but as you mentioned earlier, also I did in the early days. But my work rate, when I am working, I'm super efficient and I can get things and I'm thorough and just competitive. I've got an ego like everybody has. Our motto or mission statement, I guess, is to exceed customers' expectations while outperforming our competitors.
Wow.
And I think that it really encapsulates what we stand for, and that's now a screensaver on all our PCs in the office. So, to remind staff every day. If you do those two things, you're almost guaranteed a successful business.
Isn't that amazing? You know, it's almost success leaves clues, and I think that's the advantage of talking to someone like yourself, is we get to talk to you and go, oh, my goodness. And you're very down to earth. It's like, it's so much like common sense that we get distracted from it, and you haven't got distracted. You've managed to maintain what you know works.
That's right. Yeah. And I guess you tweak it all the way in your journey, don't you? And things that you believed worked, you know, 20 years ago or something, you realize maybe that wasn't the best way, and you've molded that method. But fundamentally, I totally agree with you. It's just the basics, and sometimes the obvious isn't as obvious as one might think.
It absolutely is. Andrew Ford, it's been an absolute pleasure once again talking to you. I love our interviews.
Me too.
Andrew, what's the best way of someone contacting Ford and Doonan? Come on, we've got to do this bit.
Well, 1-800-AIRCON. That's the easiest way.
Oh, wow. What a fantastic number. 1-800-AIRCON. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. Andrew Ford, Ford and Doonan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you once again. And as we always say, have a Ford and Doonan day.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.